All right, everybody, and welcome to the 9 Years podcast. I am Nick Drake, but I am joined, as always, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. And, Stu, I'm going to start off with a little quiz for you this week.
Happy days.
What do the following players have in common? Paul Osu, Ben Hennigan, Luke McCormick, Ethan Chislett, and Ayub Asal. And the answer is not, they all play for AFC Wimbledon.
Oh. They wear the same coloured shirt on a match day. They wear the same boots. They share the same changing room.
And that's kind of on the same theme as they all play for AFC Wimbledon.
I know, I'm a bit stumped. All in common, same birthday in the same month?
I mean, they might do. That's not the answer I have, but we should investigate just to make sure that isn't actually the case, because it might be. I mean, it's unlikely, but it could be.
Well, I noticed how they all have birthdays quite close to each other. I've noticed there was one where I think Ollie Palmer and someone else had a birthday on the same day. Can't remember. But yeah, they all have birthdays. Well, of course they do, because that's what happens yearly.
Thanks for that. All our players have birthdays. The link, Stu, is that all of those players listed there were booked against Sunderland on Saturday. And I call to mind the sketch from the very first episode of Red Dwarf, when everybody aboard Red Dwarf is dead. And Holly is explaining this to Lister, and he mentions more and more names. And every name he says is returned by the simple phrase, they're dead. Everybody's dead, Dave. And I sort of imagine Robbo and Rob Toovey having that same conversation on Monday morning, where Rob's like, yeah, everyone got booked. And Mark Robinson's like, what, even Paul Osso's like, yeah, he got booked. What, Ben Hennigan, yeah, he got booked. To the point where Rob Toovey's like, even I got booked. Even I booked. Because Rob Toovey was the one missing from that list, of course, because he has also got shown a yellow card against Sunderland on Saturday.
He makes me chuckle when he gets frustrated. It's not the first time he's been spoken to by a referee, is it, this season? But, yeah, no. Do you know what? I think, yeah, the bookings were crazy. The frustrating thing, most of the bookings were for kicking the ball away or stopping playing. It was just, they're silly bookings. But yeah, once you do one, you've then got to do the rest. And I think he was trying to share it out amongst the teams, wasn't he?
Indeed. His name was Simon Mather, but I think his name should have been Simon Mither, because he was really pernickety over the smallest little things, including the Paul Osu booking for kicking the ball out or away when it was... The problem is exactly as you said there, Stu. He got the yellow card out, and once you do it, you can't then stop doing it. You have to punish everything because you get yourself into that situation. Sadly, that rule does not apply to the awarding of penalties, whereas if you give one, you've got to start giving them all, because we got one. We should have had another one, but it wasn't given. And I would say the one that was the foul on Jack Redoni was more of a penalty than the one that was actually awarded for handball, from which Luke McCormick scored from. But there is no doubt in my mind that the referee was never, ever, ever going to give that penalty. He was never going to give us two penalties in the space of 20 minutes. And I think in front of the away end as well, I also think he was perhaps beginning to doubt the awarding of the initial penalty.
Yeah, well, when we got the penalty instantly, I was like, "That's harsh. We're not right on top of it." But it felt harsh because it didn't feel there was much distance between the players. However, looking back on the replay, I think the rule this year is if your arms are in a natural position, then that's okay. But you know, arms above your head are not a natural position. So I actually, when I looked at it, I thought, yeah, I can see why he's given it. Because he has his arms high above his head, that's not a natural position. The second one I thought was a foul, but then I didn't realise there was a handball as well. So it was take your pick. But yeah, it was clearly more of a penalty. And it's frustrating, isn't it? But referees are humans, of course. And I think in their head, they don't think they can give two penalties in one half, especially not against Sunderland. However, you know, Oxford got four penalties against Gillingham, didn't they, recently? All scored by the same player. So that sort of dispels that. But yeah, it was a pen. And do you know what? We probably, you could argue we deserved a 2-0 lead purely for the amount of pressure we put on. And actually, we looked like we were more interested in playing the game with Sunderland. We're just literally, I've never seen a team play such one-paced football.
Yeah, the last 20 minutes especially, I thought there's only one team that was going to win this game. We were the only team that looked like we were trying to win the match. Not quite entirely sure what Sunderland were trying to do. It was interesting listening to Alex Neil, who was taking charge of his first game, who said afterwards he mentioned different levels of fitness / match sharpness. And he seemed to think that was a factor. They're a little bit disjointed. I think he's got a bit of a work to do there. I think that opened his eyes to the scale of the job, perhaps, because there wasn't a great deal there from Sunderland, except for the goal scorer, Alex Pritchard, who looked, I mean, he looked a cut above, to be honest with you. I think we look back at some of the players that have stood out to us this season, and he's in that list of best players I've seen at Plough Lane. And the only frustration being he scores a free kick, which is identical to a free kick he scored 3 days earlier away at Cheltenham. Same distance, same place, same corner. And I know you can argue there's not a lot you can do about it, but I do wonder if we could have done a little bit more, perhaps not giving away the free kick in the first place.
Yeah.
But also, who was it? George Marsh, that was lying flat on the ground behind the wall, this new thing that's come in to try and block any low free kicks. I don't think he was ever going to go low, was he?
No, but it feels like you have to do it now. Although it does make me chuckle, actually, with that, because the funniest thing I saw was when Lionel Messi was used as the person lying down behind the wall, which, you know, you've got one of the greatest players of a generation, and you're saying to him, I want you to get hit with the ball. The difference was, though, is he was facing the way the ball... I don't know if I... George Marsh was facing Nick Zanev. I don't really think I want to sit there or lay there not knowing when the ball's been hit and if it's going to you know, bash me on the head or bash me on the bottom. So I think I'd rather face the way it's coming, personally. Not even get out of the way. You know, the interesting thing is, remember like L3 kits where players literally, the wall just falls apart. They literally just cover everything. And you can't really do that if you're on the floor, can you, really? Because you can't hide. But... I don't know what you do. I know some people have said, you know, it's very similar and looked at Nick Zanev. The setup of a free kick, unless you don't have a wall and you literally just go right and anyone impedes on you, sometimes free kicks set themselves up for that in terms of, you know, it's wall side. So he's covered his side and people are going, why do you not get over? But actually, how it's been set up, you could argue the wall don't jump high enough because actually it doesn't really go that high. You know, could have done with Peter Crouch in the wall. One game off.
The question about which direction to face when you're lying on the floor, would you rather be looking up at the backsides of four of your teammates or would you rather look at the face of Nick Zanev? I think our female fans would perhaps suggest they'd rather be looking at the face of Nick Zanev.
Yeah, but you've got no idea when the ball's been. You have no idea, do you? Like, I want to know if I'm going to be hit by a football. I want to know I can see it rather than being surprised. Although you would say if he had a GoPro on him, he'd have had the best view of that goal, of that free kick going in.
Yeah, don't put ideas in TV companies' heads because this will be the next thing they start doing. You know, on the little, what they'll start doing is they'll put little cameras, pinhole cameras on their shirts, maybe attached in some way to whatever the bras they wear are. What are those things? Those black bras they wear?
They're trackers, they're like GPS trackers, aren't they? Because they're allowed to use them now. They used to only be allowed to use them in friendlies, but now you can use them... whenever.
Yeah. No doubt. This is coming into football probably now, Stu. Another one of those technological advances that we could do without. I was actually, what was I watching the other day? So I'm just watching a goal back. Yeah, the wall jumps, but Cosgrove's in that wall as well, you know, Stu. He's 6'4". And you're right, the ball has to go up and down quite quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's difficult from the angle there, isn't it? But, you know, realistically, if you've got a... We always say sometimes it's too close. You know, you hear that sometimes. You've got to get it up and down. But he does that really well. But it doesn't hit the top corner. Do you know what I mean? It's up and over. So, hey, look, it's one of those. It's either a great free kick or you can pick holes in all goals. But I wouldn't blame Nick Zanev for being honest with you because I think he, positionally-wise, does what you expect. I don't think he was too far over.
Do you know what? Just watching it back, actually, do you know, I just think that's a great free kick because you talk about it going up and down. I don't think it starts to dip until it's basically on the goal line. Mm-hmm. I think it's rising. He's kept it flat, but just high enough to get above the wall. And I just think fair play. Like we said, very, very good player, I thought.
Yeah, I agree.
There's nothing more to say about that. But no, talking about technology in football, sorry. What was I watching, Stu, the other day? Was it a, do you know what it was? It was the Wayne Rooney documentary. Have you watched this yet on
I
Amazon
haven't.
Prime?
No, I'm going to wait for it. I don't know what I'm waiting for, but I'm going to wait for it.
As Gwen Stefani once sang, what are you waiting for? I've had half term this week, so I had the opportunity to watch it. But it was interesting watching back. It was when we beat Turkey. He made his England debut, his first start. We beat Turkey at the Stadium of Light, coincidentally.
Yeah.
And advertising hoardings. Right, because you know my moans about digital advertising boards. And they say, well, the sponsors like them because they get more visibility when they get their time all around the ground. Da, 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 da. But before we had the digital ones, they just had the revolving ones. What's wrong with that? Just use those. I know you get fewer sponsors on them, but that's what they had. No one was complaining. Now everything's got to be digital. It's very irritating.
Do you know what? Actually, I was thinking about you, but talking about advertising, because I start looking at it more now. I was watching the Peterborough against Reading match on Sky this week, and Peterborough have actually gone to having sponsorships on their seats in terms of flags. You know, like we did in lockdown when we used the seats as an advertising opportunity. Well, Peterborough have done it anyway. Just like literally next to the dugout, I don't know, it must be a flag of. I'm useless in, but it's basically covering seats. I'm like, just sell the seats. But
Yeah,
yeah,
well.
it's this sponsoring thing, isn't it? Of the sponsors are massive. Although at least they're not like really bright orange, like at some ground in Southwest London. The Ryegas ones were just, oh my days.
Right, I'm with you now. Right,
Sorry, I
okay,
thought I
sorry.
didn't really give you much of a clue there, did I? Really
I
orange.
was thinking, sorry, I was thinking, were you talking about us? Were you talking about the ones at Peterborough? No, you're talking about the
They,
ones at us.
the colour, they've got better. Like I think they've turned down the
Yeah.
how vibrant they are. The white ones were
Yeah.
very white. I know it sounds stupid, but you know what I mean. But the orange is just a colour that they're struggling with, and I really struggled to when they put it up. It was like a beacon. It was like, oh, it's like flashing at me. I'm like, no, not good.
No, they have got better in terms of the brightness of them, the opposite the West Stand, but they are still, especially at night games, a real distraction, a real nuisance. When the ball's on the floor over that side of the pitch, it would take your pick. It's like it's the old spot the ball competitions for everyone in the West Stand saying, what's going on here? Like none of us actually know.
It's just when it comes onto the Ryegas one, you literally your eyes literally have you can't miss it. Your eyes literally are like having to adjust. And I get it, it's a very vibrant colour, but it's a bit off-putting.
What else was off-putting about the results on Saturday against Sunderland was not just the bookings, but the referee's general performance. We talked about the penalty he didn't give, spoke about the bookings. Do you know what happens in situations where a referee, was it Keith Hackett came out in the week and actually said clearly he's lost a bit of control there of the match?
He's on Twitter now, isn't he? I sometimes watch the Keith. I follow because I'm interested in him because I'm listening to listening. I'm reading Mark Clattenburg's autobiography.
Is he the guy that made the cakes?
Oh no! Have I got his name wrong? No, I haven't. You're just making jokes, aren't you?
No, I'm just making a joke, yeah. I'm just,
Yeah,
yeah.
but I'm reading that at the moment, and I'm really fascinated by referees and the psychology of it and stuff like that. And it's a really great book if you anyone gets a chance to read it. But yeah, Keith Hackett, I think he was talking about the standards have dropped. I know on his Twitter and stuff. And yeah, they do. Sometimes they just you are losing control. If you're not, if you're sending out yellow cards all the time, you're losing control. And as you said earlier, you then compare. So you get one free kick for a foul, and then you get another one for a foul, and you're going, one second, ref, that's the same as the last one you just booked, and that's a yellow. And when when Defoe comes on and gets a booking for trying to tackle, it's just like it's a farce.
The one thing that showed to me that the ref had lost a little bit of control, and I think everyone on the pitch and in the dugout did well to sort of calm themselves down afterwards, was when Paul Osu got fouled on the touchline. And I think it was Mitete, was it, that got booked at this point?
Hilarious.
And I'll tell you why he'd lost. I'll tell you why he lost at that point, because actually that was right in front of me, my position in the West Stand, in front of the away dugout. And there actually wasn't a lot in it. The way Osu's come off the pitch makes it look really bad, but actually it was a bit of a nothing. If it wasn't for the way that Osu sort of falls off the pitch, I don't think anyone would have raised an eyebrow. But initially, then exactly what happens is you've got managers and benches that are frustrated because of the amount of bookings that have been and decisions that have been made. Everyone obviously naturally reacts when they see something like that, and the referee's forced into a decision. And at that point, I thought we were really close to boiling point. I wasn't surprised to see we got a red card in the end, and we'll come on to that one. But I thought it might come a little bit earlier than it did because of that heightened tension that kind of the referee had instilled in people with the way he handled it.
Yeah, do you know what? When I first saw that, I thought it was a red. And the reason I say I thought it was a red is because of the speed. And I think it was down to the speed of both players. Obviously, Osu's quick and the player that went in there. One way we laugh was that he basically went down a tunnel. And I was like, we'll just keep going. Because it looked reckless. I think to me, it looked reckless because of the speed he was going in at. Not saying you can't run. I think that's what it was. You got two very quick players crossing in. But you got a better view than I have, so you know it wasn't. But I think the problem was, though, and probably from my point of view, is because it boiled up. You then naturally your thing is, well, that's got to be a yellow, that's got to be a red, and you're waiting in a way for a red card because there's only so many players you can book, and you can only book them twice, unless you're Graham Pohl, and you can do what you want. But you know what I mean? Like, I think that's probably what it was, and that's probably what the tunnel area did. They're all like, well, this is gonna be a red card eventually, and it's basically who gets it first.
Basically, from my viewpoint, it was Osu was running down the wing, and the guy's quick, and he just gets his foot into to make the tackle. Ball goes out of play, and you're right. It's as you talk about it there, it potentially a similarity to. Can't get my words out properly to the Assal red card that was overturned earlier in the season. Remember, we got a second booking very late on against, was it Crewe, was it? Or Fleetwood?
Yeah, why they played in red. That narrows it
They
down a
played in
bit.
red, whoever they were. And remember, we said that I didn't think there was much of a problem. But again, as you mentioned, it was perhaps the speed he was going in at. So he was trying to make a block, basically, of a player making a clearance. And he's jumped in and he's gone in quite quickly. And he said perhaps the speed he was going at made it look worse than it actually was.
Yeah, and I think that's, we've got some very quick players, in the South. I think what I did find, and I think a few people noticed this, that some of them were quite clever in their, I would call it tactical fouling.
Oh, tactical fouling, yeah.
And it's something that's being used a hell of a lot now, isn't it, against the South. And I suppose the frustration was is that actually I thought the South would probably get a yellow card for dissent, and he gets it for basically trying to dive off a little board into a pool that wasn't there. That's polite in that way. And actually, do you know what really surprised me was that it took so long to get the final yellow.
Yeah.
But that sometimes happens, doesn't it, in that stage? And I think in the end, I think Louis Cormier gave the referee no choice in a way, but then Assal didn't help. Obviously, we've known he's been on a, well, he's been on a leash a little bit, and he to not get that yellow card that took him over the bookings. Let's be fair, forward getting 10 bookings, that's a problem.
Well, reputation, isn't it? I think that's what's happened. I think there's a part that plays into it, doesn't it? Because he seems to be getting. We've all seen Ayew all season long, and he gets fouled a lot and gets very frustrated. But he also starting to get bookings for perceived dives, and it's happened a few times this season. And are referees aware of this, or do they see a player that's going down a lot, so they're looking just to make sure? Because I'm if you're a young player and you're getting fouled all the time, eventually at some point you're going to think, do you know what? Got to take a chance here that I'm going to get something. And in the box, he took a chance. But it's a
Yeah,
costly chance.
do you know what? It'd be interesting to ask Robbo a question when we next speak to him. But I wonder, because you're right, you got me thinking. There are some managers that will have a quiet word with a referee, maybe, of look, this team are known for fouling, or we've got a player. And I'm wondering whether someone does chat to a referee, just go, look, Assal, he's nippy, he's getting fouled quite a lot, to look after him. Do you know, like sometimes subtle
Yeah.
messages. I wonder if we do anything like that, because there's definitely Robbo's talked about it before. Do you know what I mean? Like players are, they're deliberately pulling him down and tugging him, and it's up. In a way, referees have got to be better. I think Assal is, he's not necessarily a player that is in League One. You think about his size and his age, and You know, he is different, and he's probably, you know, he's going to play at a higher level. There's no doubt about that. And you could argue there's players of equal ability, but they're a little bit older and at bigger clubs, and you could argue they're getting home decisions, and we're probably not. Because I know we are starting to get frustrated with that a lot, aren't we? Because the way they're tactically fouling, yeah, it's stopping us. I think every team that's coming to us at the moment are trying to break up play. They're trying to do stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. Because we know if we get a head of steam, we're pretty good. Which is a compliment in a way. But we're not. And, you know, I was saying to you before, I was on a show, not trying to plug it. I was on a show with Gabriel Sutton, and it was a dog fight. And the funny thing was, is the fans
Hold
were
on,
there.
the show wasn't a dog fight.
Sorry, the League One dog fight. Sorry, yeah, the
Nice.
League One dog fight. But what was interesting, we put a link on the Twitter of it. I think we've already done that. But the interesting thing was a Shrewsbury fan was like, no, sorry, it's a Fleetwood fan, didn't see us in any trouble this season. Said, you know, we've got the best three attacking players in the league. It was really interesting when he said that. And none of them put us in the bottom four simply because of the attacking flair that we had. Whereas actually we're the ones that are actually thinking we're not as attacking as we once were. It's so difficult, isn't it?
I think they realise that the ability and the talent is there. And as you say, and as Robert said at post-match interview, it's happening so often now, teams know that when we break on them with pace, they're in trouble. So what do you do? You do what Crewe did and Fleetwood did and Cheltenham did and Sunderland did and Ipswich did and Portsmouth did, and you take players out, you tactically foul. We occasionally employ a tactical foul as well, just to break up counter-attacks. It's not a bad tactic to employ. George Marsh got booked for it recently. Luke McCormick got sent off for it against Sunderland. The second booking, though, I'm not sure it was an attempt to break up a counter-attack. I think it was frustration. Do you know what I think it stemmed from as well? Like, sitting where I do in the West Stand, you get quite a good view of both dugouts, and it was the first time, a few minutes before Luke McCormick sending off, the first time I've seen Robbo really get on a player for perhaps not working hard enough. It was Aaron Cosgrave, and Sunderland had the ball at the back and they were trying to play it out, and Robbo was really on Cosgrave saying, "You need to be chasing and pressing harder than he was at the time." And I just wondered, perhaps that sort of McCormick was perhaps trying to set an example, something like that, the way he went in, because his foul on Pritchard, where he got the second booking for, I mean, Pritchard immediately reacted, managed to calm himself down a little bit, probably saved himself as well. But maybe that was the reasoning behind it. Maybe it was a bit of a lead by example, but just took it a little bit too far.
And you know what? A lot of stuff we do is high intensity, and I think sometimes we've got a little bit used to it now. But if you could ever watch both teams one half after the other of an old, I don't know, nothing against Glyn or Wally, and you look at a Robbo team, the intensity is just ridiculous. Do you know what I mean in terms of that? And I think Robbo demands that. You know, if you look at his warm up at the start, I don't know whoever gets there early enough. If you look at the warm up he does. High intensity, so there's very small, a small square area, and you've literally got ball boys on the edge, literally throwing the ball back in. It's high intensity all the time, and that's what Robbo wants from his team. So yeah, if you're not hitting those standards, then I think Robbo will call you out, and I think he'd call you out that more for you making the he'd call you out for not working hard enough than he would for a mistake. And maybe it's a case of Aaron Cosgrove, obviously being at Dover. Don't play that way, but he's going to come in and he's got to work hard. But we do play at a high intensity, and you're right. When we break, the speed we break at, especially when you think about Paul Osu, I've not seen anyone so quick in my life. Like ridiculous. Like I think there was one bit where he was covering, he was out of position, and all of a sudden he was back in position before he's one of those defenders that would get himself out of trouble because he's quick. You know, whereas
Pace
some
helps
defenders
him out
don't.
massively.
Yeah, and he look and you know what, fair play to him. He's looking his positional play is so much better defensively. I think he's going to turn out. I've got a lot of high hopes for him now. He's really putting in really good performances.
I mean, I didn't have any concerns defensively at all against Sunderland. Back four looks solid. You look Paul Osu, as you say, with his pace there, but then you've got Ben Hennigan, Will Nightingale, and Lee Brown, and there's experience there. I thought we did a good job. I never felt threatened at all. But no, although Will sometimes just when Will gets on the ball, sometimes he's looking a little bit edgy. He needs to regain a little bit of confidence, I think, when he's in possession. But that might be because he's a little bit of a rough spell. But anyway, that's an aside. You mentioned the relegation battle, bottom of League One, and I wanted to have a look at it because I was doing some research into the season where we were this time last year and comparing the two. So currently we are on a winless run of 12 games in the league, which has got everyone a little bit concerned. It's similar to this time last year. It was about just over a year ago since Robbo took charge. Glyn Hodges left. We'd had a winless run of 13, I think it was at the time. We're winless in 12 now, 3 wins in 24, which basically means we're winning 1 in every 8 games. But this season, we are, compared to where we were last season at this time, after 31 games, which is essentially 2/3 of the season, we're a point better off. And our goal difference is also a lot better. We're looking at, so we're currently on a point per game. We're 31 points from 31 games. Last year, we were 30 points from 31 games. I split the season into three, looking at the first 16 games as your first third, then your sex 15. That's the second time I've done that in 2 weeks. Did that to my year 11 drama class. I was looking at exam tables. And I was looking, girls, you've only got one written exam, and that is the one listed as sex. No, set text was the
That's why it's a different words.
word. So I was like, whatever you do, don't do that exam. Do the set text exam. So yes, the next set 15, second, third, and then the final third will be our last 15 games, which we still to play. First third of the season this year, Stu, 17 points from 16 games, so just over a point per game. And then the last 15, we are just 14 points, so we've dropped lower than a point per game. Only 2 wins in those 15. What were you thinking? We're thinking you want to hit 50 points. That's the target, really, isn't it? That's where you sort of say 50 points should keep you safe. So we need to pick up another. Go on.
No, as I say, 50 points is normally the recognised number, isn't it?
So we're looking, maybe we want to pick up 19 points from our last 15, which means we'd have to have a better last third of the season than we would have done in our previous two. But this is exactly what happened last season. We went into the final third. We picked up 21 points from our last 15 games. We won 5 of them. We only lost 4 of them. Those draws are really important. As Robbo has always said, don't disrespect the point. I can see that being coming into play massively in the second half of the season. We had a great run of 4 consecutive wins in the final third last season. Started going goal crazy. Scored, what was it, 3 against Ipswich, 5 against Accrington, 4 against what's their names? I literally just remembered who it was.
Swindon, we scored 5, didn't we? Sorry.
Swindon, thank you.
Yeah,
Thank you,
Swindon. But
yes.
they would, to be fair, Swindon would just, well, there's not a word to describe them that day.
Shit.
Well, I do try to think that word. They were worse than shit. I don't know what's worse than shit, but
Watford.
a lot of shit.
There you go.
Watford, of course.
So if we were to recreate, and I don't see that being beyond us at all with the fixtures we've got to come, some of them, favourable home games, and despite this run of being winless in the last 12, I still think our performance levels are good. I don't see this as a team that, I don't look at us as a team that, I don't see it as a relegation team. I really don't. I think it's more about us.
No, I don't. I don't. I think the silent performance really instilled some confidence back in, definitely in myself. I think just because, we've gone to Charlton, Rotherham just bossed us, didn't they? But they're going to do that to a lot of teams this season. I think it's interesting looking at the last 15 in last season. We won 5. We've only won 6 all season. I think that's where it is. But I also would counter that. I think Robbo's a good coach in terms of finishing a season. He proved that last year, the run we had. So I think sometimes, when you've got that finishing line in sight, that's when we all find out who's got who's made of metal and who's got the coronas, oh, what they're called,
Cojones.
that's the word, not coronas.
We really don't, Stu, need another season coming into this time of year with lots of players getting the coronas.
But yeah, I think if you look at the season, when we done this League One dogfight with Gabriel, a couple of the Gillingham fan and that asked why they didn't have Doncaster in it, and he said because they're out of it. And then of course they won away at Lincoln on the Wednesday, and they've now come off the bottom of the table. Crewe have gone to the bottom, but the interesting thing is Crewe have won more games than we have. Crewe have won 7 games, but they've lost an astonishing 22 games out of 33.
You mean Doncaster?
Sorry, yeah. And I worry about Doncaster, and maybe that's just me. My worry. I think if you look at their team, I don't think they're actually. I think if you look at players, I think they're actually better players than what they're producing, and that's always the way, isn't it? But you know, we played Gillingham. The Gillingham fan that was on there was honest and said, "Look, do you know what? I didn't even want to go to the games. Lost 7-2 at home to Oxford." But he said, "Like Neil Harris has come in and turned it around very well, very well drilled defensively." And he wasn't, you know, he was honest and said he got a hit playoff form. But we still need to go down on Tuesday night and then Doncaster at home. I think we need to get through those games with probably 4 points. Not lose it, Gillingham. But our home form, I think I was saying to you, like our home form, after 30 games, we had 1 point per game. We had 30, you know, we literally had the same amount of points, home and away. And normally your home form is better. And it just hasn't been, has it? But you shouldn't look through the season. You shouldn't look through fixtures because I worried him until we got Fleetwood, second to last game. You're like, oh, the way the tables look. But I think we've got too much about us in terms of attacking flair. But it's gonna be a challenge. I don't think we're a relegation team, but it doesn't necessarily mean we can't get caught up in it.
Doncaster, we do have 2 games in hand on Doncaster, which is handy, and we've still played. No one in the relegation battle picture has played fewer games than us, which does tend towards our favour. The Doncaster, as I remember saying, we beat them on the opening day, and I thought it was just because they were a team in transition under a new manager, looked at their squad and thought that was a mid-table team. They could be the ones that did what we did last season and go on a run that takes them out of it. But as you say, Gillingham looked well placed to do that as well under Neil Harris. So that is becoming a big, big week. And we're kind of hoping that Bolton on Saturday goes ahead, because if it doesn't, we go into Gillingham and Doncaster without Ayoub Assel, suspended for both games.
Yeah.
And you really would like him back for Doncaster at home, because you think, like he did on the opening day, he would cause them many, many problems.
Yeah.
But let's look at Bolton first. And I was really disappointed to see them lose on Wednesday. Was it Wednesday they played, or were they Tuesday? You know, Wednesday night at Wirt Burton.
Yes.
Because they had been 7 unbeaten before that. So if they'd have come into us 8 unbeaten, I'd have fancied us to have broken that run. As it stands, I still think they're on 4 consecutive home wins. So again, that's to go 5 consecutive home wins is hard.
Yeah.
So there's still hope for us. However, no McCormick suspended, no Assel suspended, Hartigan injured, and Rodoni unlikely. It's looking like a tough ask.
Yeah, I think if anyone's got any sense, I think there'd be a lot of people blowing a lot of wind on Saturday morning, whatever direction they want to blow it. Do you know what? I think that's a really depleted squad. My gut thing, I don't think the game would go ahead because the wind is quite strong. Even down here. I think there'd be a lot of games called off because of safety concerns rather than...
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'm being honest with you, right, if we're trying, they're saying, and not, I'm a weather reporter, no way.
What?
I can only tell it's going to rain when I see dark clouds, so I know...
You've been lying on your CV again.
Yeah. Although my son now looks out and calls them and goes, "Daddy, rain clouds." And I'm like, clever, they're dark. Nice. Doesn't know it's... I said to him the other day, I said, "Where's the sun?" And he was looking everywhere. There was no sun out. But he thought there was a sun out. And I thought it was quite funny. I'm going to do that more often. That keeps nice. Amused for a little while.
Reminded me of something, which I must say before we finish. But go on, sorry.
But I think they've issued red weather warnings across all of sort of Manchester, Liverpool area. And it's more because of wind blowing debris and stuff like that. So no one's in a serious thing. Wouldn't be surprised if we don't travel or have travel or change our travel plans to travel up late because that wind is quite strong. And I think that's the first time I think they've they've given such a red warning across most of the country. So I think a few games will get called off. You're right, though. You're right, because we don't, obviously, we want to get that game ticked off to for a sell, but I doubt it's going to be on.
If it does go ahead, what are your thoughts? Do you think we sort of just... Do we take it as another one that's a bit like an Ipswich or a Sunderland or a Rotherham, where anything you get is a bonus? Is it like that?
I think so. And not to bring the weather in it again, but I watched Peterborough versus Reading on Wednesday night, and it was a nothing game because the wind was just, you know, it was fast called. You know, like when you used to play football on the beach or when you were younger, where those really plastic balls you kicked and you had no idea where it was going. Mm-hmm. It felt like they were those balls. Some of the kids would think, "What are you talking about?" But you know what I mean. And it made a bit of a mockery of the game. I wonder whether that's going to be the same with the Bolton game, which could work into our favour. They're quite a strong physical team where we can get it on the ball and play, but I don't think it's not a game for knocking it long and stuff like that. So if it does go ahead, I think the weather will play a part in it, and I think it would probably suit us.
Bolton have got, obviously we know from when we played them earlier in the season, they've got good players. Atalayan, I thought, was a real handful. Bakayoko's in there. But you mentioned there about perhaps not being a game for long balls or playing off a big man at top. But Sam Cosgrove, I took that as a huge positive from Sunderland. And I thought, first half especially, someone with his back to goal that can hold the ball up, but he can move it on quickly as well. And he was mobile. And there were lots of encouraging signs. So, yeah, I'm positive. Like you, Stu, following that performance, I was positive about the future. I think lots of good signs. But anyway, sorry, Bolton, if you're going to give a score prediction, what do you reckon?
I'm going to go for a 1-0 win.
Okay. I'm going to go for a 0-0 draw. I haven't actually looked at fixtures. I was just looking at the weather forecast, sorry. Remember we had this conversation a couple of years ago, and I remember this vividly, because it was before we travelled up to Rotherham, which was just very close to before lockdown. And we got a 2-2 draw with a Kwesi Appiah last-minute penalty, and Max Sander scored a great goal. And we were talking about storms, because it had been stormy, and Rotherham was very wet that day. Nice little away day, but a very, very wet day. And we talked about the naming of storms, and we said storms are actually given names according to the alphabet. They're not named after who discovered them. That was something else. But I've looked ahead, because the BBC website's got a list of what the names are for 2021-22. And these are brilliant. Some of these I can't pronounce because I've never encountered these names before. But H is for Herman, and I immediately think of Herman Harrison.
The Icelandic breeze.
Yeah, there you go. But G, if we get to G, Stu, very quickly, I'm going to be loving it, because G stands for Gladys. And I think that's... I just love that idea. Gladys, of course, were painting, Phoebe's painting, I think, was called Gladys, for those in the know. But yeah.
Because the one at the moment is called Dudley, isn't it? Which is hilarious. Cause I think everyone does that Dudley voice, don't they?
Yes.
The Westminster, so I'm not going to do that and spoil it for everyone. What's the one called? Is it not? It's not Effort, Eunice. Is it? What's it called?
No, it's not. Ethel. Gladys was one old person's name enough. And they've gone for Eunice for E.
Eunice?
Eunice. Storm is that Eunice is what's... Yes, people are listening to this now on Friday morning, or maybe even late Thursday if I've got it up in time, so to speak. They'll be hearing the wind and the rain outside, from Storm Eunice.
So Eunice is going to be blowing quite a lot, actually, let's be fair. If it's a she, I don't know.
That's a girl's name, it's fine.
Let's call it A. Joe, it's really weird, isn't it, to have two storms so close to each other. Probably not helping each other. Well, they're probably increasing them. Yeah, they're probably making it stronger, isn't it, on that? But I don't know. If the game, like I say, if the game goes ahead, I think it's playing the conditions. I was watching the Peterborough Reading game. And although, by the way, Reading, I mean, so much trouble. But they still got wet Danny Drinkwater. Like, what are they paying his salary?
Did I imagine that he went to Chelsea at some point?
Yeah, he did.
And then from Leicester. He won the league with Leicester and he ended up at Chelsea.
Yeah, so he's on astronomical salaries. Reading are supposed to be in serious trouble and from all accounts can't even afford to sack their manager because of the contract. And I looked at their team, you've got Tom Ince, and you had Danny Drinkwater. And I'm like, You know, you just think the championship was full of players who I just don't think are in it for the fun. It's just such money flowing around here, isn't it? Yeah, anyway, but
it's the root of all evil, shit.
Peterborough got a good side, by the way. Got a good side. Although their goalkeeper was called Bender, which made me chuckle. And then my wife Lorraine was watching the game and said that he had a goalkeeper's top that looked like he was a bacon rasher. You know the bacon rasher? Right? You know the bacon ration, not bacon ration, the bacon rashers, the crisps.
Yeah. Well, was that sort of, was it like a pink and white design?
Yeah, he had a sort of purple and he had like some flecks on it, some flakes on it. And right. I was calling him a Bender and she was calling him a bacon rasher. Poor keeper.
Right. I don't know what to say about the...
that's how we watch games of football. That's how I get my wife to let me watch football. I let her...
The flurry of insults and terms that we've used there, but there we go.
Yeah.
We are running late, Stu. We have a couple of things to get in very quickly. Number one, well done for the ladies for a big 3-0 win against QPR on Wednesday night in front of 425 fans at Plough Lane.
A 2-0 win.
2-0 win, sorry. Yeah, why did I think 3-0?
I don't know where you got an extra goal from.
I don't know, just invented it. So 2-0 win for the ladies. Well done, ladies. Good attendance. Well done to everyone that went down there Storm Dudley in full effect on Wednesday evening. So well done to the fans that travelled down there. And I have to finish on this. Oh, dear. So you mentioned there about Thomas, your son, seeing the sun. I think there was a question that George asked on 9 Years TV to Shay Alexander, which George misinterpreted the answer because he thought perhaps that Shay Alexander was being a bit flippant when talking about an alarm clock and what wakes you up in the morning. And Shay Alexander mentioned he has a son, as in he's got a young son that gets up really early and kicks him out of bed. But I think George thought he was being flippant, discussing the fact the sun rises in the morning and that's what wakes him up. So George's next question he followed up with was, is there anything else apart from the sun that helps? And you're not the sun, his son.
Must be careful.
I laughed.
You want to be careful. We said it in Liverpool and they'd be like, what? You're buying the sun?
Wow. Yeah, true.
Yeah, story. Do you know what? George is hilarious, isn't he? Because he just doesn't research the questions you send.
He doesn't read them before. No. He doesn't read them before. It's like Anchorman. He's looking at it for the first time when it appears on the teleprompter. And unlike Anchorman, who actually says what's on the teleprompter, George just invents something to say because he hasn't prepared. So, the question was, and I said this at the time, Silverstone or Long Stanton Spice Museum? It's an Alan Partridge reference. George looked at it and went, Langston Space Museum? No such fucking place. Fuming. Worse than when he said to Nick Zanev, Nick Knowles or Nick Knowles? To which Nick Zanev replied, what? And George just repeated the same thing, Nick Knowles or Nick Knowles?
Well, it's been a couple like that, hasn't it? Where the players have gone, I don't know, either, none.
Yeah.
I know, it's hilarious. Do you know what? The interviews are going well, actually. George goes down there and watches training, and he's saying that he gets a lot of banter from them. He probably doesn't understand half the words he's saying to impress him. But Ashley Bayes is itching, isn't he, to get on one of these interviews.
Okay.
But then, I don't know if we saw it, Shay Alexander was one that appeared out of nowhere on one of the videos. He's like, just like, suddenly just dropped into the footage. And then there was another one where Andy Parslow wasn't wearing many clothes. it's more for the stuff that's actually in the background and what George is saying, to be fair.
Andy Parslow is still a better streak than our current winless streak. But on that note, that's it, I think.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? What more can you say? What more can you say after the Space Museum?
Exactly. Fleetwood Lincoln, by the way, is the pick of fixtures in League One, other than ours, this Saturday. So we'll be keeping our eyes peeled for the result of that one, certainly. But Stu, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you to everybody listening. Updates from Bolton and Gillingham will be available on our podcast Twitter at 9WiresPodcast. But for now, that is us. Alexa Bullis, bag first, milk last, 2 + 2 = 4. and we shall speak to you again next Friday.